Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, March 21st. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, West Texas teen sells steer for $540,000, by the Midland Reporter Telegram. An 18-year-old from Sterling County exhibited a steer that was named Reserve Grand Champion at the 2023 Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. Rodeo officials reported that Tristan Himes became the latest member of his family to win in Houston. Himes and his steer Astro join a family tradition of success at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, rodeo officials reported in a news release. Himes' mother won Grand Champion Steer in 1984, and his first cousins won Grand Champion Steer in 2005 and 2014. Himes' Reserve Grand Champion Steer sold for $540,000 to the Champaign Cowgirls. This article is entitled, Midland Median Home Prices Drop Below $300,000, by Stuart Doreen. The price of a home sold in February dropped to levels not experienced in nearly 2 years, according to the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. The center showed in its February housing report that the median price for a home sold in Midland County, $298,000, fell below $300,000 for the first time since May 2021. That ended a streak of 20 months. Buyers also benefited from an average price of a home sold in February, $327,924, that was around $35,000 less than January's average, and the lowest average during any month going back to May 2020. Despite that drop, the Texas A&M Real Estate Center showed that the average price for a home sold in Midland County topped $300,000 for the 54th straight month, a streak that goes back to September 2018. The decline in prices was not exclusive to Midland County, according to the Real Estate Center. More dramatic monthly decreases in the median price for a home sold were reported in Taylor County, $254,900 to $217,750, Lubbock County, $260,000 to $226,593, and Randall County, $258,000 to $235,000. Ector County showed a drop from $240,000 to $232,000, while Tom Green County bucked the trend with a $5,000 increase to $250,000. Both Ector and Tom Green counties showed increases in the average price of a home sold in February, around $9,000 from January to February in Ector County, and more than $24,000 in Tom Green County. Last month, realtor Janine Pruitt Lyson of the Janine Pruitt team had told the Reporter Telegram that the fourth quarter of 2022 showed a slower market in terms of sales in Midland County, a point confirmed by A&M statistics. In February, sales again dropped compared to the same month during the previous year, going back to June. Increased interest rates have played a factor there, according to what realtors have told the Reporter Telegram. One thing keeping prices higher than any other larger metropolitan area in West Texas is the lack of homes on the market. Texas A&M Real Estate Center showed 478 homes available in Midland County, or 2 months of inventory. Only Randall County, which includes part of Amarillo, has a lower number, 1.7 months. Other monthly inventory numbers in West Texas include 2.1 in Tom Green County, San Angelo, and 2.4 in Ector, Taylor, Abilene, and Lubbock counties. Interestingly, the total dollar volume in Midland County during the month of February, $73.45 million, was within $4 million of the dollar volume in Lubbock County. February Housing Report. Midland County. Sales, 224. Total dollar volume, $73.454 million. Average price for a home sold, $327,924. Median price for a home sold, $298,000. Homes available, 478. Months of inventory, 2.0. Source, Texas A&M Real Estate Center. This article is entitled Western United Life Building Demolition by Mercedes Cordero. The City of Midland announced the Western United Life Building will be demolished on Saturday. The 12-story building, which has been empty since the 1990s, was purchased by the Midland Development Corporation in 2018 and will be the fourth downtown building to be demolished in Midland history, according to a press release. The downtown building, located on 300 West Texas Avenue, was built in the 1940s and has a penthouse and basement. Here's some information for those who plan on viewing the implosion in person. The implosion will take place between 8:20 a.m. and 8:35 a.m. Beginning at 5 a.m., streets will be closed off and traffic barriers will be set up around the exclusion zone. Please see the map above. The immediate area will be barricaded and strictly enforced, including the inside of buildings in the exclusion zone. The barricaded area will be north of West Wall Street and south of West Ohio Avenue between North Marionfield Street and North Lorraine Street, including all of Centennial Park. If you wish to view the implosion, residents will be allowed to observe from the south sidewalk of West Wall Street, the west sidewalk of North Marionfield Street, the north sidewalk of West Ohio Avenue, or the east sidewalk area of North Lorraine Street. Parking will be limited to the areas outside the barricade plan. Restroom facilities will be limited to surrounding businesses' discretion. Spectators are strongly encouraged to bring protective eyewear and a dust filter mask. The dust cloud following the implosion can come quickly, and its direction will depend on the weather conditions. Drone use by the public is prohibited. The implosion will be streamed on the City of Midland's Facebook page, facebook.com/cityofmidlandtx. The pile of debris on the site will be about 18 feet above the sidewalk, and it is expected to take 6 to 7 weeks to clear the debris and prepare for new development, the city reported. Although every effort is being made to ensure safety and security, members of the public should assess their own risk tolerance before coming downtown to observe, the city said. This article is entitled 41-year-old man charged with aggravated assault by Mercedes Cordero. A 41-year-old man was arrested Saturday after seriously injuring a woman in South Midland, according to court documents. Midland County Sheriff's Office deputies were dispatched to Midland Memorial Hospital at about 10:46 a.m. Saturday in reference to an aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury. The assault first started at Kentquick near Florida Avenue and ended at a residence on South County Road 1200 the night before, according to the arrest affidavit. Deputies who went to interview the victim observed that she had serious bruising to the face and left elbow. A nurse at Midland Memorial advised that the victim suffered a left orbital fracture and would need surgery at a later date to fix her eye. She also had bruising to her face and elbow and had a concussion, according to the arrest affidavit. The victim told deputies that her friend Jesse, whose real name is Jesus Manuel Ledesma, asked her for a ride to Lone Star Bar at 9 p.m. Friday. At about 10 p.m., she returned to the bar to pick Ledesma up, who insisted on driving, but she told him he was too drunk to drive. Jesse began to get irate, so she let him drive, according to the arrest affidavit. They then drove to the Kentquick near Florida Avenue. The victim told deputies she wanted to go home, but Ledesma wanted to visit a friend's house. Before leaving the gas station, the victim wanted to get out of the car, but Ledesma pulled her back in the vehicle and began to drive. Once they arrived at Ledesma's friend's house, the victim told Ledesma she was going to walk home, but he wouldn't let her out of the vehicle. The victim stated that's when Ledesma began to punch her with a closed fist to the left side of her face, according to the arrest affidavit. She also stated Ledesma drove away from the residence after an unknown man at the residence saw the disturbance. The victim stated she lost consciousness from Ledesma punching her in the face. She also stated she didn't remember how she got home, but does remember getting to the house. She told deputies that Ledesma told her to tell her family and boss that she had jumped out of the car, which caused her injuries, according to the arrest affidavit. The victim's boss sent someone to look for her because she never misses a day of work. The employee found her and contacted her family. The victim gave deputies consent to enter her residence to search for Ledesma. At the residence, Ledesma told deputies he went to pick the victim up the night before because some dude had beat her up. Deputies sent a picture of Ledesma to the victim, who identified him as the man who assaulted her, according to the arrest affidavit. While at Midland County Jail, Ledesma used one of his two allowed phone calls to contact the victim. According to the arrest affidavit, the conversation started as, "Hey, it's Jesse. Why did you tell them I hit you?" Ledesma told deputies he was not the one that assaulted her because his name is Jesus and does not know who Jesse is, according to the arrest affidavit. Ledesma was being held in Midland County Jail for aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury, a second-degree felony charge. Bond is set at $15,000. This article is entitled Midland College Presents West Texas Symposium of History, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. The annual West Texas Symposium of History will be held from 9 a.m. to 2:15 p.m. Saturday in Room 101 of the F. Marie Hall Academic Building on the main Midland College campus, 3600 North Garfield Street. The symposium is free and includes complimentary light breakfast, lunch, and a copy of the West Texas Journal of History. Presentation schedule: 8:30 to 9 a.m. symposium registration and complimentary light breakfast. 9 to 9:05 a.m. opening remarks by David P. Hopkins, Jr., Midland College Dean of Social, Behavioral Sciences and Business, and Henry Professor of History. 9:05 to 9:45 a.m., Historic Hotels of West Texas, presented by Rebecca Bell, Executive Director, Midland College Foundation. 9:45 to 10:30 a.m., Lawn Atlas Missile Silo in Abilene, presented by Carlos Torres, Midland College. 10:30 to 11:15 a.m., The Decline of Rural Health Care in Texas, presented by Itzel Cantu, Midland College. 11:15 a.m. to 12:15 p.m., complimentary lunch, and Midland College Honors Project poster presentations and awards. 1240 to 1:25 p.m., Permian baseball. Midland's rise within the hierarchy of America's game. Presented by Brian M. Ingracia, Assistant Professor of History, West Texas A&M University. 1:25 to 2:10 p.m., The University Lands, Land and Higher Education in Texas, presented by Todd Houck, Department Chair and Professor of History, Midland College. 2:10 to 2:15 p.m., Closing Remarks by Hopkins. The annual symposium offers a wonderful opportunity to showcase research of West Texas Community College and university faculty and students, Hopkins said. We are excited about the agenda for this year's symposium, as the topics are diverse and cover aspects of history that may not be familiar to many. Symposium participants will be able to ask questions and participate in discussion following each presentation. The symposium and accompanying West Texas Journal of History are made possible through an endowment given to Midland College by Paula and Jim Henry. For more information, contact Hopkins at 432-685-6805, westtexas@midland.edu. This article is entitled, Alabama Man Dies in Crash West of Odessa, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A 42-year-old Alabama man died Friday after a crash on State Highway 302 west of Odessa, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that Tommy Joe Borbow of Clanton, Alabama, was driving a 2022 Dodge Ram pickup westbound around 6:11 a.m. when a 2019 Mack truck with trailer was preparing to make a right turn onto a dirt road, when the trailer it was towing was struck from behind by Borbow's vehicle. Borbow died as a result of the crash. The crash took place 25 miles west of Odessa in Ector County, according to DPS. Borbow was not wearing a seatbelt, according to the DPS report. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Oil Nears 15-Month Low as Banking Jolt Spreads, by Emmanuel John Milton, Bloomberg. Oil hovered around 15-month lows as a favored spread for hedge funds to trade plunged, with banking turmoil shaking confidence across markets. Brent's December to December spread narrowed on Monday to its weakest level since December 2021, suggesting a longer-term impact from recent fears of a diminished demand outlook. Even crude's most ardent bull, Goldman Sachs Group Inc., no longer forecasts the commodity to reach $100 a barrel this year. The bank lowered its Brent projection for the 12 months ahead as rising near-term recession concerns and an exodus of investor flows sharply lowered crude prices. Investor psyche has been damaged over the past week, and it is going to take the emergence of a market stability to draw investors back to the fold, said Rebecca Babin, senior energy trader at CIBC Private Wealth. Expect more volatility and low conviction trading as we head into the Fed this week. After being stuck in a narrow channel since the end of last year, oil prices broke lower last week as the banking crisis magnified global recession fears and the resilience in Russian crude flows. The price slump has raised the prospect of intervention from OPEC+. This article is entitled, Parks Lagado Farmers Market Sets Summer Season Opening Date, by Mercedes Cordero. The Parks Lagado Farmers Market will be returning for the summer season on the second Saturday in June. The first market will be from 8 a.m. to noon on June 10th and will run every second Saturday of the month until October at the park's Legado Town Center. The market also will bring back the pumpkin patch during the October market. Vendors can now apply for the farmer's market. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, March 21st. David Earl Wahab. David Earl Wahab passed away on March 14th at the age of 74. He was born on July 3, 1948, in Woodward, Oklahoma, to Zella May and George Wahab, and moved to Booker, Texas as a young child, where he later graduated from Booker High School in 1966. He is survived by his son, Scott Wahab, and wife, Amy of Grapevine, his son, Todd Wahab, and his wife, Jennifer, and their two daughters, Ella and Ava of Katy. He is also survived by his sister, Cherry Hawley, and her husband, Kenneth, of Red Oak, Texas. His brother, Hoyt Wahab, and his wife, Itzella, of Montgomery, Texas. He was preceded in death by his wife, Deanna, his parents, and his sister, Gloria Wahab. The family will receive friends from 6 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, March 22nd, at the Schmidt Funeral Home on Grand Parkway in Katy. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Thursday, March 23rd at Schmidt Funeral Home, followed by a graveside service at 1 p.m. at Memorial Oaks Cemetery. Funeral services held under the direction of Schmidt Funeral Home, 1344 West Grand Parkway South, Katy, Texas, 77494. Dorothy Weddle. Dorothy Robertson Weddle, age 88, of Midland, passed away on Friday, March 17th at Midland Memorial Hospital. Dorothy was born in Coke County, Texas, on February 21, 1935, to the late Tom R. Robertson and Josie Emma Gallard Robertson. Dorothy was preceded in death by her parents and her forever love, Gerald Y. Weddle. Friends are invited to visit with the family from noon to 7 p.m. Friday, March 24th at Robert Lee First United Methodist Church Family Life Center, 15 West 10th Street, Robert Lee, Texas. Funeral services will be held at the same location the following day, Saturday, March 25th at 11 a.m. Burial and committal will immediately follow at Paint Creek Cemetery. Condolences may be made at www.schafferpioneer.com. Harold Hal D. Brenner. Harold Hal D. Brenner, longtime Midland resident, passed away Wednesday, March 15th at the age of 91. Visitation was at Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home on Friday, March 17th from 5 to 7 p.m. A rosary followed starting at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass was at St. Anne's Catholic Church on Saturday, March 18th at 10 a.m. Burial followed at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Harold was born on the family farm on December 29, 1931, 7 miles north of Basine, Kansas, to William and Rose Brenner. Hal has been a close friend of Bill W. for 39 years. He is preceded in death by his parents, four brothers, Dr. William, Edward, Leo, and Ben, two sisters, including Mary Brenner and Irene Antonin, one grandson, Gregory Brenner. He is survived by his wife, Leanne, sister Mildred Kuhlman of Oakley, Kansas, three sons, one daughter and their families, David and wife Mary of Edmond, Oklahoma, grandson Benjamin and wife Robin of Minneapolis, granddaughter Elizabeth and husband Kathleen Whitington of Austin, Mike and wife Patsy of Lubbock, grandson Neil of Lubbock, granddaughter Tracy and husband Chaz Westbrook of Tahoka, Texas, John Cody Brenner of Lubbock, Danny Brenner and wife Connie of Tyler, grandson Devin and wife Amanda of Dover, Florida, grandson Dustin Brenner of Midland, daughter Cheryl Cox and husband Clay residing in Tuscola, Texas, granddaughter Morgan and husband Ryan of Topeka, Kansas, grandson Brent and wife Carissa Cox of Tuscola, Texas, as well as 13 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations be made to the Manor Park Foundation, Hospice of Midland, Midland College Foundation, or your favorite charity. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Johnny J. Satterfield. Johnny J. Satterfield, a devout Christian man and honorable veteran of the National Guard and the United States Army Reserves, has met his Lord and Savior at the age of 51 years. He died peacefully on the morning of March 16th with his devoted wife of 33 years, Christine M. Satterfield, at his side. Jay was born September 24, 1971, in Austin. He planted his roots in Midland, where he built and raised a beautiful family centered around his faith. In addition to his loving wife, he is survived by his father and stepmother, Johnny M. and Jeannie K. Satterfield, three children, Justin W. Satterfield, married to Charlene L. Satterfield, Ashley A. Brown, married to Ray T. Brown III, and Austin B. Satterfield. Five grandchildren, three siblings, Robin M. Bennett, married to Bill W. Bennett, Chantilly K. Ewing and Sterling J. Satterfield, married to Emily D. Satterfield. Jay was reunited with his mother, Donna J. Earl Monrad, sister Connie L. Satterfield, and brother-in-law Coleman B. Ewing. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, March 21st at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. The family would love your attendance at a celebration of life taking place at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel on Wednesday, March 22nd at 2 p.m., followed by a graveside service at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Debbie Watkins. Debbie Watkins, 61, of Midland, passed away March 14th in Houston. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, March 25th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Elmer Sudderth. Elma Ray Sudderth, 83, of Odessa, passed away on March 18th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Crematory Funeral Home of Midland. James Arona. James Arona, 60, of Stanton, went to be with the Lord on March 16th. Visitation will be on Tuesday, March 21st, at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home from 9 a.m. until 8 p.m. with a rosary at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at St. Joseph Catholic Church on Wednesday, March 22nd at 11 a.m. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home, and online condolences can be received at www.stantonfh.com. Richard D. White. Richard D. White, 80, of Midland, passed away March 18th. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m., Wednesday, March 22nd, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m., Thursday, March 23rd, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, March 21st, 2023. Judge pauses Biden waterway protections in Texas, Idaho. A federal judge paused the Biden administration's waterway protections in Texas and Idaho as Republicans across the country challenge the environmental regulations as vague and argue the rules would create economic burdens. The preliminary injunction by U.S. District Judge Jeffrey Vincent Brown of Texas surrounds a rule finalized in December that defines which waters of the United States, often called WOTUS, qualify for protection under the Clean Water Act. The decision was signed Sunday and affects only Texas and Idaho. Roughly half of all U.S. states are taking part in lawsuits challenging the rule. Earlier this month, the U.S. House also voted to overturn the protections under a measure that Biden said he would veto if it reaches his desk. The unlawful rule would then saddle Texans across the state with crushing new regulations, slowing our state's economic development and limiting our job growth, Republican Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton said in a statement. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency said in a statement that it was reviewing the court's decision and its options. The rule went into effect elsewhere across the country Monday. The change repeals a Trump-era rule and expands some water pollution protections to thousands of small streams, wetlands, and other waterways. Our goal is to protect public health, the environment, and downstream communities while supporting economic opportunity, agriculture, and industries that depend on clean water, the EPA said in a statement. Republicans have targeted the regulation in Congress and in court, where at least five federal lawsuits are challenging the EPA rule. The Supreme Court is considering a related case by an Idaho couple who have been blocked for more than 15 years from building a home near a lake after the EPA determined part of the property was a wetlands and could not be disturbed without a permit. A decision in the case, known as Sackett versus EPA, is expected this year. Teamwork. UTPB taking aging seriously in nursing care. With an eye toward better patient outcomes, the University of Texas Permian Basin is teaching students in different specialties to work as a team with older patients. By 2034, adults will outnumber children for the first time in United States history. So, with that in mind, University of Texas Permian Basin College of Health Sciences and Human Performance has begun tackling the issue. The U.S. Census Bureau in 2034 predicts that older adults will edge out children in population size. People age 65 and over are expected to reach 77 million, while children under age 18 will number 76.5 million, according to Census Bureau information. The information notes that this is not only happening in the U.S., but other countries like Japan and Germany, Italy, France, and Spain. Eastern European countries are further along, and within a few years, many of their populations are projected to begin shrinking. America has been different until now. Higher fertility and more international migration has helped stave off an aging population, and the country has remained the youngest as a result. But those trends are changing. Americans are having fewer children, and the baby boom of the 1950s and 60s has not been repeated. Fewer babies, coupled with longer life expectancy, equals a country that ages faster, the information says. Minvera Gonzalez, UTPB Interim Nursing Program Director and Associate Dean of the College of Health Sciences and Human Performance, said, within the American Association of Critical Care Nurses, there are Bachelor of Science Nursing Essentials. Actually, one of our essentials is that our students will graduate prepared to practice with patients across the lifespan and the continuum of healthcare, Gonzalez said. It's a requirement for baccalaureate nursing programs that our students learn this stuff. Samantha Perales, Director of Field Education for the Bachelor of Social Work program, said, students who are receiving the generalist degree, a required core course, will be human behavior and the social environment. Nursing will look at the medical side and will look at what aging means socially and economically in our society, because oftentimes what social workers will encounter is while the individual is in the aging process, there's also that concern of loss of autonomy or independence or freedom of what they've currently or previously had. And so we train our social work students to navigate what that means socially for the aging process. There's also that concern of loss of autonomy, independence, or freedom of what they've currently or previously had. We train our social work students to navigate what that means socially for the aging individual, and that is a requirement for their bachelor-level generalist degree, Perales said. She added that they try to tackle the taboos around the aging process. Perales said people don't lose their goal-setting processes or what they're looking forward to in life. We do zone in on something called social exchange theory, about the way that we, in society, have this social capital exchange. Oftentimes, students relate that framework to the aging population because at one point these individuals were primary exchangers. They were head of households, they were breadwinners, and now they're having to rely on caregivers or loved ones to fill in those gaps. They are no longer, maybe, as physically mobile as they were previously, Perales said. Laura Kate Bedard, human performance and exercise science lecturer, said, from a physical standpoint, they have a course in exercise for diverse populations that teaches students how to identify and apply different techniques and different recommendations for exercise, and how older people can stay independent. Renee Fierro, clinical teaching specialist in the School of Nursing, said students have to learn how to do skin assessments, and the recently acquired geriatric mannequin helps them do that because it has skin folds and aging skin. Previously, mannequins had flat skin. Gonzalez noted that no matter what area of healthcare students choose, they are going to have aging clients. We actually have a course that our pre-licensure students can take called Fiscal Leadership Within an Organization. And we do that because, again, you're looking at a specialized population who, generally speaking, all have the same type of insurance, which is Medicare. Medicare is very specific in what they pay for and what they don't, so our students need to understand the fiscal ramifications of when we don't prevent a pressure injury. The hospital may not be reimbursed for that, but first and foremost is getting good care to the patient and coordinating with every other discipline that's necessary to make that happen, Gonzalez said. Fierro said his background is mainly in home health, and he worked with social workers and therapists all the time. It is a very important aspect because, again, in the home, that socioeconomics aspect is very important because in home health, again, the goal is to keep our patients home, but keep them there healthy and safe. A lot of that has to do with that socioeconomics situation and also how are they going to be able to care for themselves beyond their medication and their physical ability, Fierro said. He added that getting students to understand the geriatric side in home health and the coordination with other services is going to be a great asset because that's the way healthcare is. You don't work by yourself, Fierro said. You work with everybody. Trustees to hear reports, test results. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will hear presentations on guidance and counseling, results-driven accountability, and winter MAP test results during their workshop at 6 p.m. today, March 21st. The workshop will be held in the first floor boardroom of the Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Effective advising is one of the responsibilities of the district's Guidance, Counseling, and Wellness Department, Chelsea Reyes, Executive Director of Guidance, Counseling, and Wellness, will provide an overview of a student's path from elementary school through college, career, and military, and the supports that are available along the way, Supplemental Agenda Material said. In January, ECISD students had their middle-of-the-year winter MAP assessments. MAP stands for Measures of the Data. Measures the amount of growth students made between fall 2022 and winter 2023, the material said. The presentation will show fall 2022 to winter 2023 growth and will compare how ECISD measured from fall 2021 to winter 2022. The report will also look at how the data is linked. The STAR projected proficiency and how attendance affected the growth data, the material stated. The results-driven accountability is an automated data system that reports annually on the performance of local education agencies in selected program areas, bilingual education, English as a second language, career and technical education, certain federal title programs, and special education, the Texas Education Agency website said. RDA was formerly known as Performance-Based Monitoring Analysis System, or PBMAS. Local education agencies includes open enrollment charter schools. Quick Hits Membership Drive Soiree. Uptown Business and Professional Women will present a membership drive soiree from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. March 21st at Torino's Pizza Bar, 3303 North Midkiff Road, Midland. There will be a cash bar, happy hour specials, and free appetizers. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/59P7HTWE. Young Professionals of Odessa Orientation. Young Professionals of Odessa has scheduled a new and prospective member orientation from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. today at First Basin Credit Union, 7100 East Highway 191. Learn about the YPOA and how you can get involved. Visit tinyurl.com/BDZYMPPU. 9th Annual Oil and Gas Convention. Roseland Oil and Gas has scheduled an oil and gas convention from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. March 22nd and from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. March 23rd at the Midland County Horseshoe, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Visit tinyurl.com/3bp2m2ry or call 903-787-7544. Storytime Flowers, the Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled a storytime event at 10 a.m. March 22nd. Create a flower craft. Visit tinyurl.com/57DJCWRB. Art Tales, the Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4919 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Art Tales from 2 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. March 22nd, April 5th, April 19th, May 3rd, and May 17th. Art Tales is a free art education program that highlights alternating children's stories. Visit tinyurl.com/2s42mxjc. Bilingual Story Time. The Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Bilingual Story Time at 10 a.m. March 23rd. Stories will be read in English and Spanish. Visit tinyurl.com/mr384fwd. Authors Speak. The University of Texas Permian Basin will host guest speaker Sergio Gutierrez Negron at 7 p.m. April 3rd in the UTPB Library Lecture Hall, room 001. For more information, contact Antonio Marino at marino_a@utpb.edu or Robert Perry at perry_r@utpb.edu. The event is sponsored by UTPB and the Odessa Council for the Arts and Humanities. Pfluger appointed to USAFA Board of Visitors. On Monday, Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, announced his appointment to the U.S. Air Force Academy USAFA Board of Visitors, which provides independent advice and recommendations on matters relating to the U.S. Air Force Academy. Pfluger said in the press release, "As a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy, who has since spent 20 years in uniform, I have firsthand experience with the critical function the Academy plays in graduating mission-ready leaders, airmen and guardians alike. Our nation faces complex threats from China, Russia, and other adversaries, and graduates of the Academy are vital to supporting American national security. Through my position on the Board of Visitors, I look forward to championing the Academy and providing critical oversight to ensure our curriculum is focused on training men and women of character who will continue to make the United States Air Force and the United States Space Force the best in the world." OPD updates clothing description for missing woman. The Odessa Police Department is hoping an updated clothing description will aid them in finding an Odessa woman who has been missing about 3 weeks. OPD began asking for the public's help to find Rebecca Becky Demery, 32, on March 7th. At that time, the agency said she'd been last seen at Odessa Regional Medical Center on February 28th and might be driving a 1999 Dodge Durango. Since that time, officers have found the vehicle, but Demery remains missing. On Monday, OPD revealed Demery was seen on March 1st, and they found video surveillance showing she was last seen wearing a gray long-sleeve shirt with a plain printed hem, black pants, and athletic shoes. She was carrying a black and teal duffel bag as well. Anyone with information pertaining to this investigation is encouraged to contact Odessa Police Department at 432-335-4961 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. Man accused of assaulting peace officer. Odessa police allege a 34-year-old man facing a misdemeanor public intoxication charge made things a lot worse for himself by stomping on a police lieutenant's foot Saturday night. If he is convicted, he could get 2 to 20 years in prison. According to an OPD report, Isaiah Martin Garcia got into an argument with other patrons at Basin Nights on Kermit Highway shortly after midnight, and things got physical when he refused to leave. OPD officers handcuffed Garcia, and when they were walking him to a patrol car, he stomped on the top of a fully uniformed lieutenant's foot, causing the 45-year-old to start limping in pain, the report stated. Garcia was arrested on suspicion of assault of a police officer, a second-degree felony, in addition to the public intoxication charge, which carries a fine up to $500 but no jail time. Garcia, who has past convictions for driving while intoxicated, possession of marijuana, and unlawfully carrying a weapon, was released from the Ector County Jail later in the day after posting surety bonds totaling $25,312. Man arrested on suspicion of selling meth. An Odessa man was arrested Wednesday after police said he sold more than 50 grams of methamphetamine to a confidential informant. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives watched Mitchell Nelson sell the drug to the informant at a predetermined location. Nelson was arrested on suspicion of the first-degree felony by manufacturing delivery of a controlled substance, which carries with it a potential prison sentence of 5 years to life. A judge set a $60,000 surety bond for Nelson, but he was released to the U.S. Marshals Service Monday. Alabama man dies in a collision. A 42-year-old Alabama resident was killed in a two-vehicle crash Friday morning, 25 miles west of Odessa on State Highway 302. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Tommy Joe Burrow of Clanton, Alabama, was driving a Dodge Ram pickup west on State Highway 302 when he rear-ended a Mack truck and trailer being driven by a 60-year-old Odessa man who was preparing to make a right turn onto a dirt road shortly after 6 a.m. Burrow, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was pronounced dead at the scene, according to DPS. RHDV2 detected in Bosque and Ector counties. Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, in conjunction with National Wildlife Health Center and several Texas landowners, has detected the presence of rabbit hemorrhagic disease virus 2, RHDV2, in Bosque and Ector counties. This case in Bosque County is the 9th and most easterly Texas county to have a confirmed case of RHDV2. TPWD is also investigating suspected cases in Mason County. Several counties in West and Central Texas that have had recent confirmed cases of RHDV2 continue to report rabbit mortalities. Counties with recently confirmed RHDV2 cases include El Paso, Brewster, Terrell, Gillespie, Reeves, Mills, Pecos, Ector, and now Bosque County. TPWD is currently investigating additional suspect cases in Mason County, a news release said. The carcasses of two wild jackrabbits were found on a resident's property in Bosque County and were collected for testing in early March after they were reported to be dead with blood coming from the nose. The clinical sign of RHDV2 can include dullness, apathy, not eating, bleeding from the nose and eyes, or watery congested eyes. However, most rabbits are found already deceased. Rabbit hemorrhagic disease, RHD, is a highly contagious viral disease that can affect both domestic and wild rabbit species, including hares, jackrabbits, and cottontails. RHDV2 appears only to affect rabbit species, lagomorphs. It is not known to affect humans, livestock, or pets. However, pets should not be allowed to consume dead animal carcasses. DPWD continues to receive and respond to mortality events in wild rabbits and hares across the state. If you notice sick or dead wild rabbits, contact a local TPWD wildlife biologist. This disease is nearly always fatal and affects rabbits of all ages. The viral agent, rabbit hemorrhagic disease virus, RHDV, is a calciferous with two strains, RHDV1 and RHDV2, both being reported in North America in recent years. Learn more about RHDV2 in wild rabbits at tinyurl.com/KNU79M82. HHSC offers job opportunities at Midland Hiring Event. The Texas Health and Human Services Commission is inviting qualified job seekers to learn more about a career working for the state during a hiring event from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. March 24th at the Texas Health and Human Services Commission Office, 3401 North A Street, Midland. HHSC's Office of Access and Eligibility Services is looking to fill multiple positions in Midland and across Texas. Employees in these positions will help people access food, health care, and cash assistance services through Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, and the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF program. These positions give compassionate people a chance to help their fellow Texans in need. Wayne Salter, HHS Deputy Executive Commissioner of Access and Eligibility Services, said in a news release, "We're looking for highly motivated and dedicated people to join our team in this rewarding career. HHSC offers competitive salaries, employer-paid health benefits, and paid vacation and sick leave. Interviews will be conducted on-site, and conditional offers may be made to qualified candidates. Candidates must pass a background check before they start work."
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.